Hey, Zero Block 30 listeners, you can find us every Tuesday and Friday on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and YouTube. Prime members can also listen ad-free on Amazon Music.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
This week's episode of Zero Block 30 is brought to you by our friends at SeatGeek. Buying tickets can be complicated and confusing, but it's not with SeatGeek because there's a simpler way to buy, and that's with motherfucking SeatGeek. Whether you're catching your favorite musician on tour, going to a different event like NBA playoffs, NHL playoffs, wherever you want to go, SeatGeek can help you get there. I have SeatGeek app on my phone. It's by far the easiest way I've found to shop for tickets. I could be anywhere in the world, New York, San Antonio, wherever. Those are basically the ends of the globe. You can go there, get it on your phone. They rank the seats from least to worst to best to whatever. You know exactly what kind of deal you're getting. Best of all, our listeners get $10 off on their first SeatGeek purchase. Just download the SeatGeek app and enter the promo code CHAPS today. That's promo code CHAPS for $10 off. I'll buy you your first beer. I'll Venmo you. Hit me up on Twitter. This offer does have some exclusions like everybody else. Just go get the SeatGeek app and use the promo code CHAPS today for $10 off your first SeatGeek purchase. Let's go. A Platoon Rune episode, so you're going to see it. We have Max from Terminal Lance coming up. You're going to want to hear this conversation. We talk everything from painting with your dick to painting with your ass. Kate talks some stuff about a vagina. I don't even know what happened. But all that stuff, your dick, your vagina, and your tits is all sponsored by DollarShaveClub.com. Dollar Shave Club is the best way to shave whatever you're going to shave. It could be your legs, your pits, your ass, your face, whatever. Shave it with Dollar Shave Club because they have everything you need to get ready for the bathroom, much like shave butter, shave shit shower, shave Charlie's, calming butter, calming body cleanser, all that stuff. It never smells so good. It's going to smell like you are straight in the Al-Assad cafeteria whenever you get back from doing real-life missions in the real world war. You're going to smell so good, and people are going to smell you from a mile away, but it's not going to smell like ass or badissi. That's booty, dick, and pussy for those of you keeping score at home. And here's the way that you can do it with a bunch of DollarShaveClub.com products. For just $5, you can get their Daily Essential Starting Kit. It comes with a body cleanser, one wipe Charlie's, and their amazing butt wipes, their world-famous shave butter, all that stuff, man. I just lost the ad read. Hold on, I'll find it again. people go backwards. You go backwards, too. So Kate set up her computer, paused in the middle of the ad read. Kate set up her computer, and she does it the right way. Brent is backwards. It's opposite of how you would do it.
On his Mac.
His Mac. So if you go down, it actually goes up instead of down whenever you're swiping. This is good radio. Anyways, the 6-blade executive razor. Keep the blades coming.
I never changed the settings. It's just how I open my computer. I never changed it.
The 6-blade's coming.
You probably have the wrong way because you probably had to
for a few bucks more a month, Bren, please. And add in shampoo, toothpaste, and anything else. No. And speaking of your next month, for a limited time only, use the promo code CHAPS at checkout to get $5 off your second month of the club. That's code CHAPS at DollarShaveClub.com for $5 off your second month. Join the club today. DollarShaveClub.com/chaps. It's the smartest way to shave, shower, shit, whatever you're going to do with all your privates that you got on your nasty little body. Let's go into the platoon room with Max from Terminal Lance.
How you guys doing? Holy shit.
Doing great.
Sorry, am I allowed to curse?
Encouraged. Pussy, yep. Shit, cunt, whatever.
Balls.
Yeah, I think we can actually
cock balls.
We can actually be started right now. We'll just have that whole thing in the podcast.
Yeah, that's perfect.
Okay.
All right, Kate, so you want to officially introduce Max?
Yes. So, Max, and we've been butchering it all week. Uriarte?
Uriarte.
Uriarte. Max Uriarte.
That's pretty good. That's
is
good.
The cartoonist Terminal Lance. I started following him in the Marine Corps Times, his comic strip in the Times when I was in the Marine Corps, but he started it in 2010. And then it gained a ton of popularity, not just with the Marine Corps, but throughout the military and beyond. And in 2016, he came out with a 290-page graphic novel, The White Donkey, that is sort of, it's not exactly your story, but it kind of mirrors some of your experiences. Am I right on that? Or
yes.
loosely, I'm like, oh, I'm just making this up. No. And then it became a bestseller. And then you were just recently profiled by the New York Times, and the headline was, The Few, the Proud, the Bored. out of their minds. So why were they interviewing you?
So Chris, I don't know if it's Shivers or Shivers. I've heard two different
ways. I've heard Shivers, yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. I guess my publisher had reached out to the New York Times to do something with the new book that just came out, the Terminal Lance Ultimate Omnibus, the ultimate collection of Terminal Lance comics, just came out last week. And they passed it off to him because he's a Marine, and he decided to take it on. And he was coming out to LA anyway, so he stopped by here and hung out with me in my apartment. It was super awkward, and it was great.
That's really cool.
Yeah, we had, if you're a new listener, we had Max on a while ago. He was on episode 59, so we get a little bit more into his bio in that one. But we wanted to bring him back because, one, he has a new book out, and it's always good to tell people to buy your fucking book whenever you take all the time to write books. So we're going to
buy my fucking book.
Yeah, buy his fucking book.
That's good business.
Buy his book, you pieces of shit. So we wanted to just have him in for a little platoon room because the whole squad's here in New York. So we wanted to have just a platoon room. And so, Max, what we do in that is basically we talk like we were back in the platoon room about shit that we would talk about. There's no politics, no, like, policy or anything like that. We just talk about weird shit, hypothetical questions. So, Kate, had you prepare? So we'll kick it off with your question first. What's your hypothetical?
Oh, mine?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Let me pull this up. I had it written down.
And by the way, platoon room is pretty much like a Terminal Lance cartoon.
Yeah.
It's basically, he captures the mundane moments, not the thrilling ones, and that's where the Marines are bullshitting and trying to skate out of stuff. Mm-hmm. And so we're going to, it's almost like we're doing a live comic strip of Terminal Lance right now.
Yeah, yeah.
Maybe
you know,
not.
It's funny. I have a theory about Marines in a fun way. So I was talking to General Neller one day, and which occasionally
no big
happens.
Deal.
And some people had some concerns that the stuff that was being shown on Terminal Lance, he was like, is this informing reality or is reality informing what you're doing? And I'm like, the way I see Marines is what I find really interesting is that despite the fact that I run Terminal Lance on Instagram and Facebook and Twitter, whatever, and I get submitted like hundreds of videos and shit every single day, I never get anything from the Army, the Navy, or the Air Force. And I think it's unique to Marines. I think that kind of fuckery, for lack of a better word, is unique to Marines because I think that the Marine Corps has actually created a kind of perfect monster for fucking around and making really funny videos and shit. And the reason why I think that is because the Marine Corps instills a sense of adaptability and imagination in Marines that they're forced to use in order to problem solve.
Yeah,
and the problem is when you take them out of a problem and you put them in a room and they're all really fucking bored, they're going to come up with really inventive, brilliant ways to entertain themselves, which is where you get all these weird videos and stuff.
Yeah, you had a perfect example of one the other day, and I think you actually made that comment where it was a group of Marines sitting around throwing rocks at a can, and I cannot tell you how many times I've done that.
Yeah.
Just there's a little pole sticking out of the ground. Let's see who can hit
first.
First
to hit it wins, yeah.
And it's like 2 hours just sitting there throwing it there because you're just waiting on your leadership to make an easy decision.
Yeah, sorry about
that. Exactly. I think that Marines are sort of uniquely brilliant in that sense. And I think the Marine Corps actually creates this monster that makes them play with their balls and do weird shit on standby.
Yeah, my favorite game was that I played as a dog handler. We would take our choke chains. And you would get the choke chain and you would flip it and it would create like a whipping action and you would have to sit on the ground with your legs spread with your dick like straight out in the open and the first person to tap out lost. So you could be hit like hundreds of times and then we would do Kongs and throw Kongs and see if you would tap out. So, I mean, my balls had been obliterated over the 9 years that I was a dog handler.
Yeah, we did a similar game just with a can of dip and you had to like throw it and try to land it in a inopportune spot. First to like 5-1.
I always won.
Tapped out.
Yeah. Kate never got hit in the dick.
That's an unfair advantage.
Anyway.
Yeah. So my hypothetical, and I was thinking about this, and I was wondering, would you rather have the opportunity to work with General Mattis for a year, or spend one really awesome night drinking with him in Vegas? Can't have both.
Doesn't he not drink?
Well, in the hypothetical, he will. Yeah. Come on, Connors. Okay. Right, Jesus right. Christ.
You stink at these.
See, Connor's obviously an officer. God damn. Yeah. Connor. I think I would pick work for him for a year.
Yeah, I would too, just because that's 365 days worth of opportunities for things to happen. And obviously something can happen in Vegas when there's alcohol-fueled debauchery. But I just think the gems of wisdom and the stories that he would drop on you over the course of a year would just be much more enjoyable.
It also depends on what rank I am. If I'm a Lance Corporal, probably not. But
you're civilian.
Civilian now. Oh, probably Vegas then. It would probably change because I don't feel like he would have a lot of respect for me as a civilian. I don't feel like he would speak to me too often. So then at least if we're in Vegas together and it's just us two being pals, he at least has to talk to me for a little while.
Right.
Yeah, I'm doing Vegas, and me and Mad Dog are getting matching tattoos. We might even get married. I don't know. I might break up his monk status.
Kate's out of the barracks, guys.
Yeah. I'm using him for the BAH.
Does he get BAH as Secretary of Defense? Does he get some
house?
There has
house?
To be a house. Well, I bet he has a house.
Yeah.
I wonder if – is Secretary of Defense a billet that gets a house?
That got to be. Does that count as like a GS – fucking 1,000 or something. Like
I'm going to have the NSA because I'm going to Google it right now. Like, where is the Secretary of Defense's house?
Max, what would you do?
I'd do the night in Vegas, man. And it's funny because, like, I heard – I'm sorry, I don't know your name.
Oh, Captain Khan.
Connor?
Yeah.
Connor, yes, the officer. I'm sorry. The officer. I'm just going to call you Captain.
Yeah, that works.
You know, your answer is very educated. It's very like, yeah, you know, I think that you could drop some great jewels of wisdom every day. I could walk away with something new. And it's like, yeah, but you could have a really fucking cool story for like the rest of your life for one day.
Yeah, that's true. I don't know. I feel like at some point in the 365 days, he would choose someone out or something would happen that would be a good story that you could tell the rest of your life.
If I was looking for wisdom, I don't know if Mad Dog would be the one that I would go for. Like, I think tactical stories and what's going on, I don't know if, like, the wisdom aspect is what I would seek out for him. If I was going after wisdom, I would probably want to hang out with, like, H.W. Bush.
Yeah, that'd be a good choice for a year-long.
I'm not saying that Mad Dog's not, that General Mattis isn't wise, but I think that you go for him because you want to hear stories of, like, modern-day Braveheart shit. Like, tell me the stories of the Marines that should have gotten a Medal of Honor that didn't.
Hold on. Stop. For the record, did you just say you would take wisdom from George H.W. Bush over General Mattis?
Yeah, I'm a huge H.W. guy. I love H.W. Not because of policy, but because he's seen more than just about anybody. Being the former director of the CIA.
That's true, yeah. He was
being
a pilot, too.
Vice president. Right. He was in World War II. Being vice president for 8 years under Reagan, being president, I think that he was the most qualified person ever to take the presidency. Now, did he actually deliver on those presidential promises? No. But he was easily the most qualified person to ever become president.
Mm-hmm. So then begs the question, which president do you think you'd want to work for a year?
Or drink with.
Or drink with. Or drink for a night in Vegas.
Drink with, for me, Max, you go first. Who do you think?
I would totally drink with Donald Trump.
Yeah, he'd say, because you know that he's breaking down like OPSEC and shit. There's going to be no concerns about it.
He's doing some weird shit. It would just be a crazy fucking night. Like, I feel like that's the thing. He'd be the coolest dude in the world to go drink with one night, but like probably not be president of the United States. Like, that's sort of how I feel about Donald Trump.
Yeah, maybe.
I would definitely. I could see that being good. I think mine would have to be W.
Yes.
I feel like
W was having
he'd be a cool guy. Yeah, he'd be a cool guy.
I think he'd be good, just especially now the way you see him, and he's much more relaxed, and he's a pretty witty, funny guy. If we're going dead or alive, though, I mean, it's got to be JFK, right?
Not for me. I don't really give a fuck about JFK.
Dude, the stories that guy's got.
But the stories that anybody that's president has.
Ah, yeah, but you know what, chaps? Just based on the history I know, it sounds like JFK's got a certain breed of stories that maybe some other presidents don't have.
Yeah, I'm trying to go chase some tail with JFK.
Well, yeah, if you're trying to be like the wingman and get residual vagina, I think you go with JFK.
Chaps, I mean,
or Bill Clinton. Chaps, going with Bill Clinton. Tying one on with Clinton would
be fun
too.
Clinton would probably be pretty good because I bet you he's pretty loose-lipped when he's been drinking. But you talk all the time. You like Frank Sinatra.
Mm-hmm.
Imagine the stories JFK's got with Sinatra.
Yeah, I'm sure that would be good. I could get down with Nixon too. Because Nixon. Old Millhouse. Like, tell us what everybody doesn't know. Tell us what everybody doesn't know.
But
Dick.
I feel like Nixon would be a real buzzkill. I feel like he'd be such a downer.
Yeah, maybe. I think one of the last ones that I would want to drink with would be President Obama. Even though I think he has a cool personality, you start repeating like your catchphrases whenever you're drunk a lot. Yeah. I feel like Barack Obama would just say, oh, let me be clear, like over and over again. Just be a whole
You know, I like, I still have a lot of trouble doing a Donald Trump impression, but I'm a pretty good Obama.
What do you got?
Let's hear it.
Well, let me just tell you, what I think is the right solution to this, and I've talked to my advisors about this. That's terrible. I was like,
no, that was good. That was good. That was really good. Yeah.
I was delighted.
You should have kept it at like the first two or three words.
I feel like that's awesome. The hard part about impersonations is keeping it going for longer than like three or four words. Like we had that last night whenever I sang the high notes on Summer Nights, the John Travolta spot. And
I still can't do Trump. It bothers me. It fundamentally bothers me that I can't do a Donald Trump.
Just say a lot of adjectives. Lots of varies.
lot of
many adjectives, not lots of variety.
Yeah, I was going to say, just say great a lot.
Great, very.
Best.
Tremendous.
Tremendous. Billions and billions and billions. The line between a Donald Trump impersonation and a Dr. Evil impersonation damn close.
It's a very fine line. But all right, then which president do you think has the best secrets? Overall, best secrets.
Probably JFK.
I think you're right. Yeah.
Eisenhower.
I was gonna say maybe someone like FDR.
Or Truman.
Because he was in there so long.
I mean, but HW, anytime you're the director of the CIA,
Shit. And I think you're right, because, then he served, 8 years as vice president and then another term as president. So he's got 12 years worth of secrets.
And he's so
plus
fucking
CIA
adorable, man. Like,
he is.
When he
is.
Was talking about Barbs and how much he loves her and writing love letters. It's just like he's like the cutest dude in the world.
And his sock game is on point.
And he raised a son who, granted he started a war in Iraq that probably shouldn't have, but he did. W paints beautiful cats.
We would definitely do a paint and sip night. On our night out.
It should be no question if you're going to go painting with a twist, it's with W.
Yes, it's with W. Definitely. Yeah. Which president would you guys do painting with a twist with?
W, without a doubt.
Yeah.
I remember looking at his book when it came out, and I did like a little analysis of it on Terminal Lance. I thought it was interesting.
Cause his book, Decision Points?
No, his art book.
Oh, his art book. Yeah.
Was it called The Faces of War or something like that?
It's like sitting somewhere over here. I can't
remember. He's really a talented painter.
Or is he?
Yeah.
I have an art degree, but... He's good. He does some things that I find really interesting. It's not I think he has some skill that he's picked up. I don't know if he has raw talent, but he has some skill that he's learned and he's trying to implement.
I think because it's like a legible painting, like what he's trying to draw, it's surprising that
Yeah, I think the bar is pretty low for
him.
Right, and that's why I'm like, wow.
He's so good. Yeah. That's what leads me to believe that I'm saying that, yeah.
Well, he's the thing that I had, not to dwell too much on W's painting book, but it's a fun topic, so why not? The thing with his art is it's like the skill behind it, whatever, it's the message that I think kind of gets lost in some of it. Like, I think he has a message that he feels very strongly about, but once you put it up to any scrutiny, it kind of falls apart in a lot of ways.
And I think you can get with presidents like him, like there's so many people who disagree with his policies, but you can't disagree that he cares about the troops. And you could see that those decisions that he made weigh heavily on him even now.
Yeah.
And I would totally agree with that.
I wrote him a letter after I got done with active duty. Just wrote him a letter. Got a letter back.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
What did it say? Nice.
Canned letter or handwritten?
Canned, unfortunately. I was
still nice, though.
Yeah, it was nice that I did receive something back. But it was a nice canned letter. I can take a picture of it.
I love receiving a nice handwritten letter.
Yeah, I wrote him a handwritten letter. I'm big on that. Yeah. I got my own stationery and everything. I think it's a lost art form.
Of course you do.
Yeah.
All right, Kay, what's your hypothetical?
All right, this one's a little less interesting as yours. Mine sounds dumb in comparison.
Whose dick is big?
Perfect.
All right, whip them out, guys.
Challenge coins of dicks.
Would you rather not have... yes, please. Would you rather not have elbows or knees?
That's really good. That's really good.
How long did it take you to think of that one?
A long time.
I like that.
That's a good one.
Can we just go joints? Like, which joint could you take away if you had to take away joints?
Let's do joints.
All right. Cons, you first. Do you understand the game?
Yeah, shut up, all right? Shut up. I get the game. I get the game.
So well, last time,
thanks for,
Matt,
thanks for letting the officer
play
along.
We had a game that we went around, and you had to pick a real person or a fake person, and it took Cons a long time to get the premise of the game.
In my defense, Chaps explained it with the level of detail of maybe a kindergarten.
I didn't feel like it was that difficult.
After the third time, you should have gotten it.
I was overthinking it. Maybe.
All right, so
but anyway,
which joints would you take away?
I would do the elbows because I think it would be annoying. It would be annoying to have to walk with straight legs everywhere. That'd be very difficult. Whereas if my arms were just straight, I could still kind of basically do everything.
But excuse me, can I ask you something? Can you reach?
That's a good question.
You wouldn't have been able to get up from your chair if you did that.
I
think I'm all right.
I interpreted the question that you would become not like fused, but you would have like Gumby arms.
Oh,
that's even better.
You would have like no joints at all, and they just flop about.
That's even better than that. No, but you'd still have bones.
I think we should do it both ways.
Yeah,
Max, what are you getting rid of?
I mean, like for me, it's sort of obvious, but I would definitely rather have elbows because I need them to work.
Yeah,
that's fair enough.
Yeah, I can't do my job without. Arms. So.
Yeah, that is pretty important. I would get rid of all the joints in my right hand. So then I would be like the greatest slapper of all time.
Yeah.
Like the whipping action that I could get on my fingers would be unreal if I had no bones. Just be like, wow! Just absolutely slap the shit out of somebody.
Kind of like a wet towel action
with
your fingers. That'd be pretty good. I agree. Bren, what do you got?
I mean, I was going to go with elbows. I mean, it's kind of obvious. You only have a limited ones. Like, nobody – the fingers, I mean, that's just boring. I'd rather just have, like – I think the Gumby arms is very intriguing.
I think Gumby arms would be cool. You're
be
just
like
walking
the,
around.
You could be like the dude that's on, like, in front of all the used cars. Like,
yeah.
Inflatable arm man.
I think there would be a social media presence for, like, Gumby arm guy. Like, there could be a high ceiling.
Dude, every single professional team would want to hire you so you could do the Arsenio Hall whoop. It would just be in an absolutely electric whooping.
Only 90s kids are going to get that reference.
Yeah, that's fine. Kate?
Fair enough. I would have the straight legs because, one, guys love a nice set of legs, and that would be quite the pair of stems. And then, two, people on stilts crush it. You can do a whole, like, 2-mile-long parade in stilts and just be fine. So I think – and you can run if you
– What about Gumby joints, though, if you're Gumby joints?
Oh, Gumby joints. I would do my left foot so I could kick the shit out of people.
That's a good one, yeah. Get rid of the phalanges in your feet.
I mean, it wouldn't be good for walking, but...
Your feet would probably get really dirty, too.
Yeah.
Or do you have another one?
No, I think...
Can't
no, I'm sticking with what I said.
Okay.
Gumby foot.
No, I mean another hypothetical. You said you had multiple.
Oh, I do. Oh. I'm like, isn't one gumby foot
like,
enough? What more do you want from me?
It's going to be a short podcast.
So, would you rather... This one made me laugh really hard.
Let's hope it makes us laugh.
Would you rather, for the rest of your life, have breath that smells like bad farts... or have laughter that sounds like farts.
I think you want a laughter that smells like farts because it would just perpetuate the laughter. If every time I fart, every time I laugh, it sounds like a fart. Farts are funny. I think farts are funny. Maybe,
I feel like
maybe I'm juvenile.
If your laugh sounds like farts, I feel like you immediately get. Like a $5 billion Netflix comedy special. All you have to do is laugh a couple times and everybody will be laughing.
Yeah, everyone's
like a
doubled over in their seat.
I'm like red in the face just thinking about if my laughs were farts right now. Like it's gold. I don't know.
But it depends. Like if it's like a SPD style fart, it's just like a little bit of wind that comes out. I don't feel like that's as good. It's got to be
wet.
Old man
wet fart.
Bark
good
fart.
Flatulence.
Yeah. It's got to be like you've only eaten MRE peanut butter for the last week and a half.
Yes.
Wash it down with some beer.
Yeah.
Some
yeah.
near beer. Max, what do you got?
Man, I don't know. I think that, you know, I got to go with the fart laugh because there's just nothing worse than bad breath. Like, that's like the huge, that's my biggest pet peeve, like, of all time is bad breath. I just can't handle it. So I couldn't imagine inflicting that on someone else.
I'm sorry. It's killing me. I'm picturing, like, if you didn't, I know you're married, but like if you went out on a date and like the girl didn't know and she tells a joke and you're like,
that'd be like the worst Tinder profile of all time.
Yeah.
I fart when I laugh, but just with my mouth.
Don't worry, it doesn't smell.
Or would you rather have to laugh out of your butt?
Yeah.
Good one.
That's another Netflix special right there.
I would pay to be able to do that.
Yeah, seriously.
Yeah.
I'd have so many more Instagram followers if that was the case.
Yeah.
It'd be unbelievable.
What
all right, I got one for art style. All right, Max, you have to paint your ceiling like the Sistine Chapel. This is an art guy question. Would you rather do it with your only paintbrush is your dick, or you have to stick an actual paintbrush in your ass and paint your ceiling with it?
That's a whole lot of farts coming out over there.
This is you know, like, I'm not one of those guys that's like super like, whatever, if I'm gonna put something up my ass, let's do it. But
yeah. Been there.
I feel like, this is a serious query. I feel like I would have more skill with my dick because I've spent more time with it.
Yeah.
And I think that I could manage it better. I think I could perform, I could put a better image on the ceiling.
Yeah. How long would it take you?
You know, I think I'm just trying to think of the logistics of it. Like, would I be hooked up to some sort of crane contraption that's like sort of like, how do I get my dick?
This is a serious inquiry. If you paint my portrait with your dick, I'll pay you $200 for it.
200. You know, if you can bump that up a few zeros, I might consider it.
This could be your zeros. Next thing.
Wow.
Zeros. Wow.
Yikes. I'll paint my own face with my own dick.
I would seriously consider
it. Right there.
What'd you say, Max? What was the last part?
I would seriously consider it if it was worth it, you know. Would, you know, get your people to talk to my people, we'll make it happen. But
be quite the video series.
Yes.
It would be. I think I could do a decent painting with my dick. I don't know.
Like, yeah, I think you could do one with your ass, and if you like had music, you could call it like Terminal Dance, like with your hips like swaying.
Well, I mean, ultimately, like if I'm doing it with my dick, I'm still using my hand, right? I'm still controlling it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Do I have to use my just no hands?
No, I feel like you can use your hand.
Your flaccid penis.
I feel like you'd... And I think if you were going to do it, probably a Van Gogh style, because you could just put a lot of paint on there.
Mm. Yeah. I would say like a Surratt, just a bunch of dots. Just the colored dots.
Yeah.
You could just...
Although, a Jackson Pollock.
Let me...
Okay, if you could pick any artist style that you had to emulate with your dick, what would it be?
I think Van Gogh is a good choice.
Yeah,
you know?
Who's the one that did the vagina monologue?
Georgia O'Keeffe.
Yeah, O'Keeffe.
I'd just be stamping.
She painted with her vagina. Yeah. George Georgia W. O'Keeffe. Bush. Am I right?
George W. Bush. That's who I would. That's who I would impersonate.
If you could paint any painting with your bush, what would it be?
At the very least, you got hair to work with. You know,
yeah.
Bob Ross is a happy little hill over here. A happy little tree. A happy little bush. Little river right there. The Red Sea at times.
No.
Talking periods, folks.
That could happen.
Yeah, definitely.
Oh my gosh.
This took a turn.
It took a little bit of a turn.
It took a turn.
But now I kind of want to see a painting made from someone's penis.
I promise you it's been done.
There is an artist that did that. He did a whole thing. Or no, there's also another one that did it with his asshole. He would give himself a paint enema and splat it out onto the canvas. It was like a whole thing.
Wow.
Let me ask you something, Max, as an artist.
Do you have an art degree in everything? You know
yeah. I guess art is one of those things in the eye of the beholder. Is anything art really? Like if you shat paint onto a canvas?
Does art have the same rules as Abraham Lincoln once famously said, anything is a dildo if you're brave enough?
I think some people would say yes. I would actually argue no. I think art is defined within the confines of a context. Oh, what was that? I just heard a really loud beep noise for some reason. I don't know if that was just on my end.
Yeah, I think
yeah,
so.
That's really weird. Okay, I'm sorry. I sound like a psycho right now. But
what a weirdo. Go on.
No, I think that art, I do not think anything is art. And actually, it's funny, I just had this conversation with my wife for some reason. I don't remember what it was about, but you find that a lot of, I don't want to get this into like a political realm, but you find that there's not a lot of conservative artists. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if you guys have noticed that, like, I don't know how conservative everybody is or how liberal is or whatever, but there's actually not a lot of conservative visual artists. There's just not, they don't paint stuff. They don't do a lot of stuff. Because conservatism in general tends to not look for new ideas. It tends to not be quote-unquote liberal. Liberalism in itself tends to explore new ideas, tends to look for meaning in things. So that's why you find a lot of artists tend to be very liberal. And so I think art is not really art unless it has meaning behind it. I think meaning is sort of the quintessential element of art that defines it. Hmm. I do not think that simply, you know, doing something for the sake of doing something is necessarily art. But you look at somebody like Marcel Duchamp, who famously put a urinal into a museum and called it the fountain and became a brilliant artist off of that. He literally took a urinal off a wall and put it into a museum and said, this is art. That had a point behind it, though. That was meaning. It had a lot of depth. And that message was that he was challenging the institution of art to say, this is art now. And what are you going to do about it? And you know what? It became art because he said that. So that's brilliant to me. That is art. Changing things, finding meaning in things, that's art.
And when you, now that you're removed from the Marine Corps, like on active duty, one of the things that I find fascinating is that you always say that you love the Lance Corporal, that you don't give a fuck about the other ranks or anything like that. That it's, for you, it's all about the Lance Corporal. Whenever you went to mountain training and you saw some Marines doing mountain training, how different for you now being what you mean to the Marine Corps and the junior Marines whenever you go and you spend time with them training? How has that changed since you were in to now?
You know, people always ask me about like my relationship emotionally to the Marine Corps. And, you know, I don't think I ever really loved the Corps, but I love Marines.
Right.
That makes sense.
Yeah. And, you know, the Marine Corps to me is two things. It's the Marines and the Corps. And it's funny, when Chris was here, I was talking to him about this concept of shitty Voltron. And it was this thing I kept coming back to. It was an idea that it was a comic I wanted to do, but I couldn't figure out how to turn it into three panels. But it's the idea that Marines individually are really fucking cool and they do cool shit and I love them and they're awesome. Somehow they get together and form a core and it just breaks down into the shittiest Voltron you can imagine. It's like the combined forces. And it's like shitty Voltron. And as he put it, they got the turd touch where they touch something and it just turns to shit. that's sort of my feelings about it. My relationship to the Lance Corporal, that's sort of why I keep doing Terminal Lance, is because I absolutely love them. They're my favorite people on the planet. I think they're the most brilliant, the funniest, the most sensitive, and intelligent and personable people in existence are like active duty Marine Lance Corporals. And then for some reason, when a lot of people get out, they lose that. Or when they get promoted, they lose that. They lose that personability. They lose that innocence, that sort of like beautiful ignorance in a way.
Yeah,
that makes Lance Corporals so great.
That's what I was going to say. Like, whenever you get older, as a younger Marine, you're taught, take care of the Marines, take care of the Marines, take care of the Marines to your left, to your right, whatever, take care of the Marines. Then as you grow through the ranks, it's beware of the institution and concentrate on taking care of the institution and not so much the Marines. And I feel like as you grow up through the Marine Corps, we lose focus as like staff and COs and officers of taking care of the Marines, and you look for protecting the institution. And
yeah,
I always thought that was a really strange way to do it. If you take care of the junior Marines, and that takes care of the institution.
Yeah, one takes care of the other.
Yeah.
Mm. Interesting.
Yeah, and that's the problem that I have a lot of the time with the Marine, with the Corps, is the institution of it, just the perpetuation of stupid ideas that don't need to happen because it's embedded in the institution, and that's a problem. It's institutionalized into these people, and they torment the younger junior Marines with it.
And it's hard to change because it's such, like, it's so deeply ingrained. It's hard
to. Awesome.
It's a learned behavior. You get treated like shit for so long, and then you're in the position to treat people like shit, and then you're like, oh, well, I guess I'll do this now because that's what was done to me.
And that's essentially what the shitty Voltron. It all comes down to reverence, and I think that there's so much reverence for the institution. There becomes so much reverence for the Corps. I think that's actually why Terminal Lance has been so successful. It has a complete lack of reverence for anything, really, other than the Marine Lance Corporal.
Yeah, you have the Lance Corporal as the normal person. It's the leadership that are all the fucking weirdos.
It is, and that's honestly just how I see it sometimes.
Yeah,
what was really fun
absolutely
me,
correct.
Yeah, I was gonna say there's a lot of truth to what you put out.
Thank you. I appreciate that because I mean, honestly, like that's all I try to do is be honest with it. And I think that's why Marines like it too, because I think, you know, a lifer higher up could look at it and be like, oh, he hates the Marine Corps. Don't read this. It's trash. But then if they really read it and really think about it, it's like, it's honest. I'm not saying anything that's dishonest. I'm not like lying about stuff. I don't hate it for the sake of hating on it.
Yeah, the truth hurts sometimes, especially when it's going against your beloved Corps.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the way I think a lot of Marines view it, probably.
But with that said, I am sympathetic to the staff NCO cause sometimes. I was in Bridgeport. It was funny because I'm 31, and so I'm the same age as the fucking staff sergeants and gunnies and stuff. So, you know, I'm walking around mingling with all the Lance Corporals and stuff, but every once in a while, things would die down and all the staff NCOs are standing in a circle just like Lance Corporals do. You know, like when you get enough Lance Corporals together, they all just stand in a circle.
Yeah.
Scuffing their boots.
It just happens. Yeah. It's like a natural, it's like matter gravitates toward each other in space in a vacuum. It's like Lance Corporals gravitate into a circle when they're all standing around. But the staff sergeants were all doing it too. And like when I get into that circle, the way they bullshit with each other is exactly like the Lance Corporals do it, and they're just standing around going, God, this fucking idiot, my platoon, he's a fucking dumbass, and he did this shit. And then they're like talking shit to each other, like, you forgot fucking dad bod, you old man. Like, and it's hilarious. Like, their conversation was actually so funny. And I was like, man, these guys are just like Lance Corporals that have been in too long. You know?
So, your Terminal Gunny book's coming out when? Hey,
absolutely never. And it's weird because like doing Terminal Lance for so long, I've been exposed to so much more of the Marine Corps than I ever was as a Lance Corporal, which has been really cool in a lot of ways because I feel like I get a wider perspective. And honestly, I don't think anybody actually sees more of the Marine Corps than I do. Like,
oh, yeah. I don't know that at all.
From my little perch on TerminalLance.com and my Instagram and shit, like I get 100 videos a day of just stuff.
I know
every base, every place, it's every climbing place, like it's crazy. And so I have an appreciation for that. And my interactions with senior, you know, generals and whoever has been fun sometimes. But you know, my loyalty is only to the Lance Corporal at the end of the day. So like, no matter what, I will not betray that. Like that's sort of my fundamental
your muse
rule. It is my muse.
Corporal is your muse. And speaking of, as time's gone by, I mean, what how long, how many years has it been since you were a Lance Corporal?
8 years. I got out.
Do you ever feel like you run out of, like when I was writing for Duffelblog, sometimes I would feel like, man, I'm starting to lose it. Like that, that the essence of everything that
the
I had
je ne sais
when I was
quoi,
there. The je ne sais quoi. Do you ever feel like, I mean, I know you're still so connected and you get so many pictures and stuff, but are you ever like, man, like, I don't know. Sometimes I would get burnt out on the Marine Corps sometimes. Yeah. Like, I can't, but.
You know, it's funny because like, I kind of don't. Like, I don't know if it's because I stay so well connected with the Marines, but I think what it really comes down to is like half of Terminal Lance, about 5% of Terminal Lance is the comic strip. The rest of it is sort of like my study of Marines almost. Like, I feel like a Marine anthropologist or something. Right. Like, I have dedicated my life to studying the culture of Marines. And so that humor is really, it comes out of the culture. And as long as that culture's there, I feel like there's always ways to pull humor out of it.
I agree. Well, Max, thanks so much for joining us, my friend. You're welcome back on the show anytime. It doesn't have to just be when you're debuting a new book. We'd love to have you on again.
And what's that book called? One more time.
It's The Terminal Lance Ultimate Omnibus. Came out on Tuesday, available from Little Brown, available everywhere books are sold, at Barnes & Noble, Books a Million. We don't have that on the West Coast, so I actually don't know.
Yeah, I think that might have died, but Amazon?
Amazon, definitely Amazon. So have a book signing tomorrow. I don't know when this is airing.
Tomorrow.
Okay, great. Well, then on Friday at Camp Pendleton at the Marine Corps Exchange.
What a great spot to be to get your books sold.
Yeah, Marines.
Because it'll be Friday, right after payday. The Marines are going to have money to spend. Be good.
Would you rather have Max sign your book with his dick or his butt? That's the question they're all asking themselves right now. So,
bring your dick paint for sure.
Thank you so much for having me on, by the way.
All right, Max. Yeah, thanks, man. Appreciate it.
Absolutely.
Thanks, dude. Hey, that was great.
Thank you.
Yeah. Thanks so much. Kate, it's great to finally talk to you.
I know. We've been lurking in each other's internet worlds for years and years.
Yeah,
now.
You know, it's so funny. Like, every veteran that I know follows you on Twitter. And I swear, like, all of them have, like, a low-key Twitter crush on you. They're all like,
oh, shit. Hello.
That Kate, man, she's so funny. Have you followed her? And I'm like, yeah, I followed her.
That girl talks about dick.
Did you guys see the calzone that she posted?
Wonder if she wants to get it.
Yeah. Did you see the calzone she posted? It looked like a vagina.
Yeah. And I'm pretty sure she has one of those, which is cool.
Pretty dope.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I also love your Twitter. It's great.
Well, thank you. Advice. I know I'm like fangirl. I'm like, I've been such a fan of Terminal Lance ever since I was in. Was it going when you were in?
God damn, that was rude. Yes.
Did they have
Chaps, did they have Terminal Lance before computers?
God damn it, man. It's not like I'm that old. What were you?
I was Desert Storm.
Yeah, seriously. Chaps.
What year did you join, Max?
2006.
Okay, so it was only 2 years after me.
Okay. Just
Christ.
Jeez. It didn't start the cartoon till 2010.
Kate, when were you in?
2008 to 2012.
Like Chaps.
Yeah.
Kosovo
guy. Yeah. I think Chaps was a gunny when I was Lance Corporal. He was actually maybe.
When? I don't want to answer this.
Yeah, anyway. Chaps is old. But yeah, I was in 2008 to 2012.
See, Max. Huge shout out to Max again for coming on the show. I love that dude, man.
Yeah, he's very insightful.
He's a smart character. He loves the Marines, and that's what I'm all about, too. He's just a good dude overall. I've never seen him be overly rude to anyone, which is a hard position when you're in a veteran position of influence. Like, he's definitely in a better veteran position of influence.
He is in more than a veteran position of influence, in my opinion, just because of the nature of the size of the Marine Corps. I don't think you could toss a rock at any Marine and they don't know who Terminal Lance is.
Every single Marine knows who
exactly.
He is.
Yeah. So I think
any Marine
really
over the last 15 years knows who
he is. He's a big time ambassador, so he has a huge responsibility there. And he does great with it.
Speaking of huge, if you want to have a huge dick and you've been struggling with ED, use our folks at 4Hems. 4Hems.com/chaps is going to be a great way for you to do that. Know the well-known generic equivalents, the name brand prescriptions to help you keep your hair, to keep your penis getting hard. No snake oil pills or gas station counter supplements here. No waiting room, no awkward doctor visit. Save hours by going to 4Hems.com/chaps. It's so easy. Answer a few quick questions and a doctor will review and prescribe. You just got to tell them, hey, dude, my dick's not getting hard enough. Boom, you got your fucking pills right there. Because they want you to have a hard dick. They want you to have all your hair. They want you to have all that. And so does your lady friend, because they also it's good for skin care, sexual wellness, and a stop for hair loss, no matter where you're losing your hair. I bet it'll work on dick hair, too.
Probably. Mm-hmm. I don't think it discriminates. It just says, oh, there's some hair. Let's help it grow.
Yeah.
So if you want to have a big bush, ladies.
You want a 70s style
ladies,
porn bush?
If you want a huge bush, maybe they'll have a 4Hers. But for now, I think it's just 4Hems.com/chaps where you can get that stuff.
Nothing hard about that. Or is there? Eyebrow wiggle.
Double bonus episode.
Bow, 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 bow.
have an interview from a fellow who was an air crew chief on some Chinooks. For Chinooks, you don't know what a Chinook is. It's a helicopter. He's going to talk. He goes by the Night Stalker. This podcast is brought to you by MyBookie. This interview is going to be brought to you by MyBookie. You know you think you're going to win the ball game. It's going to be Red Sox, Dodgers. My beloved Astros are playing Bren's beloved Yankees, not Khan's beloved Yankees, because he doesn't really care about the Yankees. Yes. Get in on the action. It's the safest online sports bet in the world. It's the only one that we recommend to our listeners. MyBookie.ag offers all different kinds of ways win on wagers, a Major League Baseball, basketball, hockey, whatever you want. Use the promo code ZERO. You're going to get a 50% bonus when you deposit. I would only recommend a website to my listeners that has been good to me. Not to mention, you can play all their games on your cell phone, iPad, tablet, whatever the fuck you got that gets on the internet. You can play with MyBookie.ag. You play, you win, you get paid by using MyBookie.ag. Using the promo code ZERO, again, you're going to get a 50% bonus whenever you sign up today. Here's the fucking Night Stalker. He's coming to stalk you in the night. Well, now on Zero Block 30, I'd like to welcome our good friend, Sergeant David Burnett, who is a former Army sergeant who flew Chinooks for in special operations. You're going to hear so much more about that. Excited to have him on. He's also an author. So I like to have enlisted guys who can write. We have me and Kate who do pretty good at it. And then David went, like, he went a little bit further and wrote a fucking book, like a real big
real
boy.
Real fancy pants.
We're
going
to talk to him about that and the process of getting it approved in the Pentagon. David, thank you so much for taking your time and joining Zero Block 30.
Thank you guys so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
So let's just jump right into your life, man. Like, how did you get involved with Chinooks? How did you, when you brought your little dick skinners down to the recruiter's office, did you say, I want to be on birds?
So I was actually going to college first semester at Denver Metro, where I was studying aviation technology to become a fixed wing pilot. And just turned out that there was a recruiting station inside the cafeteria where all the students ate and whatever. So one day I decided to walk in the recruiting station and I was like, you know, what's the process to become a helicopter pilot? That's my goal. Well, it wasn't my goal at the time. I guess it was more just kind of getting some information, figuring stuff out. And this was a good recruiter, man. He's like a used car salesman. He sold me on, hey, you don't want to be a helicopter pilot. You want to earn your stripes, get in as a helicopter maintainer and work on them, and then when you've been in for a few years, then you can apply to become a warrant officer and go to flight school. So
they have an answer for everything, and you just, like, you should looking back, you're like, god damn, that was such bullshit. Like, no, I should continue to go to school. I want to be a pilot. Don't tell me what I want, you bitch.
He probably just had those slots to fill, so he's like, no, here's what you really want to do.
Like, what do you want to do? I want to be a sniper. Well, do you know that the admin exists in the military too? Like, before you can snipe, you need to fill out these forms for people to get paid.
The Army needs S1.
So you signed up and you signed the dotted line. Tell us a little bit about the roles and responsibility of a crew chief for a Chinook.
So a crew chief within special operations entails quite a bit, and we're pretty much in charge of everything from the cockpit back. So we're the pilot's eyes and ears in the back. So when we have customers on board, we only supported tier one guys, and we're pretty much letting them know that we're loaded. All the guys are on board. We're in charge of manning a 3,000 round a minute minigun. And then depending on the LZ conditions when we go into land, if ever happens we needed to fast rope guys in,
so let's unpack. We have a lot of civilian listeners.
Yeah,
so let's unpack some of those acronyms. All right, so a tier one guy is a what?
So tier one would be any special operations force unit, like SEAL, Special Forces, Rangers. Sometimes we worked with the British SAS. So we always had guys on board that were operating under the Special Operations Command.
There we go. All right, and an LZ is a landing zone. So as soon as you get there, then what happens?
So depending on the conditions, a lot of the times in Afghanistan, we would experience heavy brownout, or there would be like some random clothesline or Afghanistan stood up volleyball net or something, to where we couldn't land in this field. So then the pilots would say, okay, you know, we're going to have to fast rope guys in. So we always had fast ropes attached to the back of the Chinook, which are giant green ropes that are 60 feet long that we had the ability to push off the ramp of the Chinook. And then these guys would fast rope down. So we would be at a 30, 40, 50 foot hover. And then all of a sudden the nice landing zone turned into, okay, a fast rope operation where we're telling guys in the back, okay, it's time to fast rope. And we unclip the rope in the back, push it off. It hits the ground. And then we inform the pilots, you know, ropes on the ground, fast roping in progress. And so we're kind of monitoring this while the pilots are maintaining a hover. And then we also have to be keeping eyes out around 360 degree perimeter, making sure we're not taking small arms fire while these guys are trying to get off the aircraft.
And so as the crew chief, you have a lot of responsibilities, one to your pilot, but to the rest of the crew as well. And you're the one, so kind of give the people an example of what you would be doing while you're doing this. Like, what is your roles and responsibilities as a crew chief when the tier one guys are going down the ropes and you're in hover? What are your responsibilities?
So it all depends on where you are on the bird. On the Special Operations Chinook, there are four crew chiefs, whereas a conventional Army would only have two.
If you had two chiefs, you didn't have one.
Yeah, right. So the two at the front are on the left and right door gun miniguns, keeping surveillance and scanning their sectors of fire, while the two crew chiefs on the back ramp are leveling the ramp, getting out on the stubby wing of the ramp, which is a section just big enough for a crew chief to fit in and underneath. So it's kind of hard to picture and put into words, but the crew chiefs on the back are pretty much at the very edges of the ramp while they're giving direction to the guys on board to start fast roping off. So both crew chiefs will push the ropes off the ramp when the pilot calls the command ropes, ropes, ropes to the back. And then once we hear that call, then we can wave on the guys to fast rope. But, you know, these are hard charging guys. They're ready to go. They're excited. So we have to make sure that their intervals when they're sliding down the rope are enough to let the guy who hits the ground get out of the way before the guy sliding down on the top of the rope slams on top of them.
So, David, you're talking about some pretty high-speed operations here. You're talking about tip of the spear when we are considering who are the personnel involved in these missions. The 160th isn't something that people just walk in off the street in the Army and say, hey, I want to be in the 160th. It's a very elite unit. Could you talk us through how it is that you became part of that unit?
Yeah, absolutely. So I was in the conventional forces for 2 years as a maintainer before I decided to say, hey, I want to become a crew chief in this elite unit. And I was on my first deployment, 13-month tour, and I figured out I had to submit a pretty lengthy application, turn it into my first line supervisor. He would take it up the chain of command. If everyone signed off on it, then they would turn it into the 160th recruiters back in the States. So time went on. We were wrapping up that deployment, my first tour, and I finally got word that, hey, you got in. You're going to 160th. So we wrapped up in Afghanistan, came back to the States, and even though my application was accepted, I still had to undergo their selection process, which is a 5-week-long selection process called Green Platoon, where they weed out all the shitbags, pretty much.
So what does the day-to-day look like in Green Platoon? What kind of shit do you do? I'm sure it's a ton of bullshit.
Yeah, just a ton of, you know, mental mind game stuff. I recall one of the first days we were there, we had this really intense packing list and just like the most random dumb stuff you could think of. Like, we needed a lighter wrapped in green tape with our name on it, and then wrap clear plastic tape over that, And then, like, our shoes, the shoelaces had to be tucked in and stuff like that. Anyways,
so looking,
we looked really
– looking back, okay, let's unpack this because this is a pretty common military theme. Looking back, what do you think the reasoning was that you needed this lighter wrapped this way and wrapped again this way? What do you think the reasoning for that was?
It's just attention to detail. Yes. And, you know, the instructors are – they just want to make sure that no matter how stupid the instructions are, the guys who really want to be there are going to put in the time and effort to go through those exact instructions and make it happen.
Yeah, it's an easy way to get rid of, as you said, the shitbags.
Yeah, so we do the same thing across the Marine Corps and I assume across the Army and other branches of the service, maybe not to the level that Marines take pride in doing it. But when we have field day, like we do it where the staff NCO or the sergeant in charge will come in and they'll legitimately do like a white glove type of inspection once a week, like to look at how you're living and how you're going. And junior Marines at the time, when you're doing it, they're like, why the fuck does my room need to be this clean? And it has nothing to do with cleanliness. It's attention to detail. It's doing exactly what you're told to do to the 10th degree. We know that your room is clean because I can walk in and see that it's clean, but it needs to be fucking spotless. And right. That's how you show that you have attention to detail.
And that's what we do with PFC Bren all the time. I'm like, bring me a Starbucks, grande, 3 grains of sugar, inside a giant croissant. Don't fuck it up. And he's still here. He's hanging in there.
And
but we
keep it simple for Connor because he's an officer. My only ask of him is that he doesn't drink water into the microphone.
Like, getting better at that.
Yeah.
Crushing it today.
So, all right. So you get done with Green Platoon. You graduate there. Do they have any extra physical requirements that you thought were like incredibly daunting looking back that you were like, fuck, I could not do that now?
Yeah, probably. So throughout the 5 weeks, they have 3 timed ruck marches that they kind of pepper in throughout the course. One's a 4-mile, 6-mile, and a 12-mile, and you have to complete those all within a certain time. And like the 12-mile, I don't think I could. I mean, it'd take a lot of training for me to get to the point where I could be like, okay, I'm going to crush this 12-mile right now. But I'd love to be back to that same physical fitness level I was once at.
Me too. I got it.
We all would.
Right after I got out, I did. You know, you always talk about whenever somebody goes to college, they put on the freshman 15. I think they call the first year veteran puts on like 50 pounds.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Like when you first get out, you just become, at least for me, I just got really, really fat. Mm. And I decided to get back into shape by actually doing rucking was how I got back into it. So I put on one of the little calorie counter watches and threw in like 40 pounds into my backpack and just started rucking around my neighborhood. If you ruck for like 2 hours, you burn legitimately like 1,200 calories.
That's awesome.
And I just lost so much weight from doing it. It was great. But I would not be able to do it right now.
No, I get winded walking up the steps here to the studio.
Yeah, yesterday Kate and I went to go to a different building. And she was like, I don't know if you want to come here because there's like 2 flights of steps. I legitimately almost turned around again.
Yeah, it was a lot.
Like, no, I don't. So you're going through and you've done three deployments, right?
I did 1 with my first unit and then 5 with 160th.
5 with 160. Jesus Christ. So give us some of the highlights of some of your best days because we always talk about like high speed. Give me a story that's like, you would go if you could go back and relive it and do it all over again, starting from the beginning. Where would you go?
As much as you can.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right. Within the realm of OPSEC, as always. So I guess one of the more memorable times. I mean, there's a lot of missions that we took part in that we're taking small arms fire a lot, but it was my first deployment where I received my CAB, which stands for Combat Action Badge. And I was new, I was fresh. I just got done with BMQ, which is Basic Mission Qualification Course, which was a prerequisite before I was even able to deploy with the unit. And that was where I got to learn the ins and outs of flying. So I get downrange, I'm fresh, new guy. I'm like super excited about
all your gear
this
clean as shit.
Yeah. Exactly. So it was either the first or the second mission that we went on and left the wire, and we were supporting 3rd Ranger Battalion at the time. And I was on the left gun crew position, which is where they stick the newer guy normally. While there's still a lot of responsibilities at that position, it's easier for the flight engineer, which is always at right gun to kind of coach the guy at left gun.
It's kind of like you're playing right field in softball.
Yeah. So, so I was on left gun, and the pilot calls 1 minute, 1 minute. And that's when we relay back to the guys who are on board 1 minute. And so now the guys on board all know we're 1 minute from landing, 1 minute out from the target. So you begin to feel the aircraft kind of rear up and slow down. And then we also start descending. So everything starts becoming a lot more clear under NVGs. You know, some town lights are lit up and stuff. So I could start to make out like clotheslines.
Do you guys go red light too? Like whenever you're inside the helicopter, you switch from a green light to a red light whenever you're getting closer to the ground?
Like almost like if we had jumpers on board, red to green.
Yeah. Like do you...
We don't switch on a light just because we try and keep everything inside pitch black going into these places. But we do have the troop light on board for when we do jumping operations.
Okay. So you're getting closer to land and keep going. Sorry to interrupt.
Oh, no worries. Yeah, so we're 1 minute out and everything starts to become more clear. I start to make out courtyards and mud huts and buildings and all this stuff. And this is my first time doing or either first or second time doing an infill to an actual target. And we were landing at the X that night, which means we're landing at this guy's doorstep pretty much.
Love it.
And I see these three dudes on top of this rooftop. And yeah. I'm like, what are those dudes doing? They like to sleep on their roofs, I guess. So that's pretty common there. And then all of a sudden I see this guy, one of the three dudes pop up and he starts wielding something on his shoulder. I'm like, what the fuck is that? You know, I'm new. I've never seen this kind of stuff before. So close and right in front of the fight. And it's an RPG and he launches it at Chalk 2, which was the bird right behind us. We were Chalk 1, so we were doing a two-ship infill. And I see this plume of smoke just leave his shoulder, and it is like something you would see in a Hollywood movie. And I'm just like, holy shit. And I call contact left, and all of a sudden, the Chalk 2 birds, their whole left side, they start lighting him up. So we have on the aircraft, on the back window, there's a 240 Bravo machine gun. Mm-hmm. And then on the front, there's the minigun. So their whole left side starts lighting up this rooftop. And then the guy who was on left ramp called that we were going to engage. And then as soon as he started firing, I just let the minigun unleash. And just rounds and rounds are just pelting off this rooftop. And all of a sudden, you know, this threat is all of a sudden taken care of. And we're,
peak missed,
you know,
and what have you.
Yeah, he... Fortunately, the RPG missed Chalk 2, but the pilots are still up front, you know, concentrating on the landing. So, you know, we're trying to eliminate this threat, but we're still on our final approach, ready to land. Mm-hmm. So the threat's eliminated, and we begin our approach, and we land. The guys get off and, you know, continue mission and end up completing the mission successfully that night, no casualties. And that was kind of the first experience I got of like real combat for me.
And those moments when you're done with your first element of combat, when it's really close to hand to hand, or you can actually see it, that's when for me war really became like real. You're like, there's real. Somebody almost got shot with an RPG. Like that. That's a real life situation. Mm-hmm. But I want to see if you're like me. When you're on your way back to the base, did you have like ideas of what your dress uniform was going to look like past that point, when you knew you're going to get your combat action badge, you knew when you walked into any place else, like any kind of ball or military appearance, or you're going to do a formation for the rest of your career, you're going to walk in with a big swing and ding-a-ling because you have that little, you have that check in the box and you want that check in the box. Did you feel that way too?
It didn't hit me until the pilot was like, does everyone on board have their cab yet? And the flight engineer was like, nope, Burnett doesn't have his yet, because it's so common, you know, for us to get shot at going in on infill, that all of the more senior guys who have, you know, more than two deployments under their belt already have it. So that was like a common question. And it didn't hit me until the pilot relayed that to the flight engineer at the time. And I was like, holy shit, I'm going to get a combat action badge. That's kind of cool. But there was so much adrenaline pulsing through me that whole night. I was like more thinking about what had just transpired. I was like kind of thinking of things that could have happened if they didn't happen the way they did. And I'm fortunate they didn't happen that way. But at the same time, it's like, fuck, that was pretty crazy.
I look back at some of my experiences too, and I'm like, I can't believe I only got shot once.
Yeah.
Like, I'm pretty good at this.
Could have been a lot more.
Yeah, it could have definitely could have been a lot more.
David, you're talking, you know, pretty efficiently eliminating a target there. What is it about the 160th, you know, whether it's the missions you guys are doing, the equipment, the people that you're transporting, what is it about the 160th for our listeners that makes them so elite? Makes you guys so elite?
Well, for starters, it starts with the foundation, and that's the men who I had the opportunity to work with. So the guys who have to go through the same grueling selection process and get through Green Platoon, and then not even after that are faced with more schooling just to be thrown into the crew chief spot. And then you start developing this bond with these guys. And if it's not for good crew coordination and the pilot's great communication up front, then, you know, you're useless. And I chalk it up to almost like a weapon system. If you take the bolt out of a weapon, it's going to be inoperable. And that goes the same for a well-developed, well-groomed crew. If you take a crew member out of that Chinook, and now you're down to three crew members and two pilots versus four and two, then essentially that Chinook is inoperable. So it definitely starts with the guys who, you know, you're building these bonds with and who you train with constantly.
But some of them are fucking idiots too, right? I mean, you know, I'm not naive enough to know that not everybody's fucking going out and being Audie Murphy. Some of you guys are fucking idiots too. Like, you have people that I've worked with enough reconnaissance units to know that not everybody there is dope as shit.
Do we tie that fast rope? Did we?
Yeah.
Oh shit. Nope.
You do all your checks and everything, but and I'm sure that the book that you're writing now, that's going through the process of getting approved from the Pentagon, will highlight some of the other moments as well. How is that process of going through the Pentagon?
Well, to be honest, it's a pain in the ass.
Yeah. Fuck them. Come on, General Mattis, help him out.
Yeah.
Dude. He's just trying to write a book, make a little money.
Yeah, come on, Mad Dog. Where you at?
Yeah.
We've been very disappointed with Mattis so far. I'm going to put a call in and be like, approve David's fucking book, man. He's trying to get some shit done.
So when I was first kind of cornering, you know, the last turn of wrapping the book up, I started researching on, you know, what exactly I had to do to make sure I'm crossing off all the right boxes and not, you know, stepping on anybody's shoes or pissing anybody off. And I spent, you know, maybe a week talking to USASOC, which is the United States Special Operations Command, SOCOM, 160th, public affairs officers, all these people. And I'm pretty much getting the, you got to go to this guy. So I get another phone number. And then that guy would say, yeah, we don't do that. You got to go to this guy. And then it was for a week I was going, bam, 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 bouncing all over the place. And then finally, this public affairs office headquarters in D.C. was like, you need to talk to this lady at the Pentagon. And I'm like, okay, this is going to be fun. And he like straight up gave me her phone number, gave me her email address. I'm like, okay, you know, kind of feel like I'm getting somewhere here. And I figured if I sent her an email, she's probably not going to write me back, you know, that kind of thing. I sent her an email, and within like 10 minutes, she sent me an email right away. She's like, yes, I'm the person you need to go through. Currently, there are 15 other manuscripts ahead of you.
Wow.
And it turns out she's the only person at the Pentagon that has this responsibility. So I almost imagine it like.
I'm sure she reads some really bad writing.
Yeah. Yeah. But imagine that, a bottleneck in the Pentagon. Imagine that.
Yeah. Wow.
But actually, 15 is less than I thought it would be.
I thought it'd be hundreds.
Did you have, whenever she, when she said, yes, I am the person, did you have the moment where, like in the movie Platoon, where you dropped to your knees and felt like it was raining and you throw your hands in the air where you feel like you really succeeded?
No, I actually, it reminded me of the movie Happy Gilmore when. He goes and visits his grandma, and she's complaining that her hands are hurting.
Yeah.
So I imagine this lady at the Pentagon is like that grandma.
My eyes hurt. I read too much.
Yeah.
So, David, this sounds like a real pain. So, I mean, why even bother? Why'd you want to write a book in the first place?
And what's the title? What's it called?
Okay, so the title is Making a Night Stalker, The Triumph and Near Tragedy of a Special Operations Aviator. And then to answer your question, Connor, it wasn't going to be a book at first. It was a few paragraphs and a short story to as homework from a VA counselor to try and get some of these demons out of my head.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was like, well, that sounds fucking stupid to write this all down. But I started writing it down and I was like, okay, cool, whatever. And then that short story turned into 10,000 words, and I just kept writing, and those 10,000 words end up turning to 138,000 words. And so I was like, wow, this is a fucking book now, so I might as well publish it.
Yeah.
That's awesome. I also have a book called Making a Night Stalker, but it's about a bumble date who ghosted on me.
Ooh.
Had to find his ass, yeah. So I hope mine gets out before yours does, but...
Actually,
David, just send me the book. I'll approve it and just get that thing out there. We'll just publish that bad boy on Amazon like today. And if Mattis,
under our names.
If Mattis has any problem, be like, look, dude, I don't know where your podcast ranks on the top charts, but ours is always in the top five. So get the fuck out of here, Mattis.
And I have a quick question about that. Why do you have to send your stuff through the Pentagon?
Well, there was a big ordeal about it in 2011, 2012. So after the Bin Laden raid in May, a SEAL who I don't even know his real name. He's gone by so many names to kind of
Owen something,
try and
right?
stay. Yeah, Mark Owen, yeah. But I think his real name is something Bissonette or
yeah.
I don't know. Anyways, he wrote a book about that raid and didn't go through this process because his lawyer suggested it didn't need to happen. And then it turned out to turn into a huge court case. And I think all the proceeds now go to the DOD from the book. And he ended up having to pay a bunch of money to the government for not going through that process. So he kind of set the forefront on what needs to happen. So I don't want to end up like.
Yeah, because they wouldn't have had, with the Bin Laden story, they wouldn't have had that they had. Set up tactical training grounds for like a week before, and then they're doing so. He gave away like
right.
So it's about protecting our the way we operate.
Yeah,
okay,
yeah,
that's,
it's
okay.
Very much an OPSEC thing. Like, so if he's talking about the helicopters, the reason why he has to go through, they don't want him to give away any technology abilities that are not out in the public. That's not public knowledge. So they just make sure that none of that information's out there.
Got it.
Yeah.
But during the editing process, when I figured out, okay, I'm going to try and publish this, rereading some of this stuff, I kept that in the front of my mind. So when I was going through, I was definitely looking at things that might not be public knowledge now and might not be something I want to talk about, just because the special operations community likes to keep a lot of that stuff really close guarded. And I don't want to give any advantage to the enemy that doesn't need to be talked about. So,
yeah.
And then going through the Pentagon is just, you know, a double check, 100%. This is good to go.
Yeah. Well, if you don't want to give it out to everybody, you could just text me some information.
Yeah.
It's like
let us
normally
know.
Secret.
Okay.
And I'll keep it.
We won't tell anybody.
You won't like write a blog about it.
So has this really helped your transition out of the military?
Yeah, it has. So the transition for me was really tough. So I started writing in 2014 when I got out, and then I kind of hit writer's block and I stopped and I started thinking about some of the stuff that we did downrange more and more. And I started drinking more instead of putting it down on words to try and use my writing as a coping mechanism. So Jameson became my coping mechanism.
Co-author.
And yeah. And then I was just, you know, consuming so much alcohol a week. It was ridiculous. And I was angry and I was drinking all the time and I felt like shit every morning. And finally, I decided to stop drinking at the end of 2017. So when I decided to do that, which was really hard and a pain in the ass, I decided to start writing again. Mm-hmm. And so I picked up at the end of 2017 with 70,000 words. And then I just wrote and wrote and wrote and wrote. And then finally, finished the book at the end of 2017, December timeframe, and then sent it to the Pentagon in January. And then, you know, haven't had a drink since.
Good for you. Congrats. That's awesome.
Well, David, we can't wait to see your book, man. We'll have you back on whenever they get done, and we can go through some of the stories once we have an actual chance to read it. We appreciate you taking the time out of your schedule, man. Thank you.
Thanks, Night Stalker. That was great. Any save rounds, alibis?
Yes. If you are listening to this episode and you live in Boston or near Boston, tomorrow, Saturday, Cinco de Mayo, Barstool is hosting its Derby Party, 3 to 7 at Tia's. And then after that, at 8 p.m., Operation Heal Our Heroes is hosting our Boston Social, our spring event. All proceeds will go to benefit veterans' mental health care.
Mental Health Awareness Month,
thank
and
you.
Khan's is going out to do everything with Operation Hero Heroes. So if you want to get up with that, hit up Khan's link. The ZBT link will also put it out if you want to be a last-minute participant in that. There's still tickets available.
Yeah.
Also, you'll be able to donate through the links there if you can't make it to the event but still want to help, because you can help even if you don't get to party. People forget that. Or you can Venmo Khan's and he'll put it in there.
Mm-hmm.
Captain Khan's Venmo is open, so hit him up on the Venmo if you don't have time to get into your wallet and do all that PayPal bullshit. Just Venmo him at at Captain Khan.
Oh my God. All right. Your
all
turn.
Right. Any save rounds, alibis, Kate?
No, sorry.
Never mind, guys. I can't get it right.
Anything for you, Radio Brand?
Listen to High Hitters Monday to Thursday.
Oh,
yeah,
let me tell you something.
Wait
let me
a
tell
minute.
You something.
Yeah.
So Tuesday night,
special
I was like,
4-hour
edition.
Oh, yeah,
of we
Zero
didn't
Block
mention
30.
This. You fucked everything up.
Yeah.
Special 4-hour edition of Zero Block 30 this week.
I decided, you know what, I listened to it a little bit on Monday, but I was like, Tuesday, you know what, I'm going to give my friend Chaps a call and Casey and call in and see how their show goes. So I, 20 minutes into the show, I decided to give a call while I'm watching the Yankees Astros. And next thing you know, I get put on hold for the duration of the show. But out of principle, I stayed on the line. And then I finally did get on the line, and we were having a nice chat, and I broke Sirius. So I'm sorry. But the point of the story is, High Haters was so good, and obviously I don't have to say this. I'm actually saying this because I believe it. It was so good and fun that I didn't mind that I was watching the ball game on mute with High Haters going in the background. You and Casey, sometimes things just work and they click. Your relationship with her, you can see it works.
Mm-hmm.
And the topics are all over the freaking map. The calls are great. So, you guys, if you're not listening to it already, check out High Haters.
Thank
yeah,
you very
it is
much.
Really fun. And congrats to you, Chaps. That's
thank
awesome.
Thank you. I appreciate that. And it's in iTunes. It comes out on Tuesdays and Thursdays. We appreciate you guys listening. It's mental health care. If you are listening this week and you are struggling, reach out to us. Reach out to somebody. We love you. We care about you. Thanks for taking your time and sitting with us for 7.5 hours today. We appreciate it. Sound the retreat.